powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline from ESPN, one of our favorites and one of yours, Mina Kimes, joining us now. Mina, how's it going?
Hey, good. How are you guys?
We are fantastic. Obviously, very, very exciting. We've now had three consecutive years of first-round picks that we actually expect the Seahawks to make. And you have been a longtime Seahawks fan, so you know what it's like to be like, okay, 26, and they're going to trade back. So here we are for a third year going, oh, my God, I might recognize this name that they choose. When you think of a name that you're hoping you hear at 16, what comes to mind?
My personal favorite would be Troy Fautanu, the Huskies tackle slash guard, because I just think it's such a perfect marriage of need on the interior of the offensive line, the positional versatility. We'll see, you know, what's going on with Abe Lucas at right tackle is also valuable. I think he's super pro-ready, polished, just incredible athlete. I would love that for them. But after that, there's a number of defensive linemen I'd be excited to see them go for. Byron Murphy Jr. and Johnny Newton, the defensive tackles out of Texas and Illinois. And then Laiatu Latu out of UCLA and Jared Verse out of FSU. All good options.
Mina, I'm here for the chaos. I'm looking at the top of the draft, and I'm looking at New England. They're talking about, hey, we're listening. I'm looking at Arizona. They say, look, we're listening too. The Giants at six has been connected to J.J. McCarthy. There are a lot of teams that need quarterbacks. What's a scenario that you can honestly see going down when it comes to maybe a team like Denver or Minnesota moving up and trying to get their guy a quarterback?
Yeah, I think the most likely scenario is that Minnesota moves up to five, potentially four, but probably five for J.J. McCarthy. Not set in stone, of course, and we'll see what happens with pick three. I think it sounds like the Patriots are most likely to stick and take May. And then it becomes about Arizona and L.A. Arizona, you know, obviously trade down candidate, tons of needs on that roster. But they also have quite a few draft picks this year because of the trade they did last year. They have an extra first rounder. They have an extra third rounder. So I think the opportunity to take Marvin Harrison Jr. at pick four would just be too tempting. So L.A. would be the spot I'd look at.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to quarterbacks, what to me is most fascinating is the gap between the top three. And you wonder, like, well, where's, you know, might Jaden slip a little bit or does he go at two? You know, you have questions about Drake May, but we all know the top three quarterbacks. And then there's Bo and Michael Penix Jr., who are, you know, four and five or five and six. And then in the middle, you've got JJ, who I've seen mocked as high as number two. And then I've seen mocked at like 16 to Seattle. What makes J.J. McCarthy to you, I know, what makes J.J. McCarthy to you that kind of like in-between kind of volatile, he could land a number of spots guy?
Small sample size.
Yeah.
That's why. You know, it's what makes him so appealing to teams because the unknown is always appealing to GMs and coaches. You know, just not a ton of reps in Michigan and there's questions about, oh, do they trust him with the offense? Well, you know, I think the results for Michigan are pretty undeniable, so you can't really question the way they approached offense. And obviously, when you're out of lead, you run football a lot. So there's that. But I think in those relatively fewer passing reps, he did show a lot of traits that I think would be enticing to a lot of front offices: accuracy, good arm strength, athleticism. So you can kind of predict a developmental curve onto him. Without knowing, you know, what it looks like. For example, you know, I was talking to my colleague Dan Orlovsky about how one of the questions I have about him is he doesn't really, there's not that many touch throws on his tape. It's a lot of fastballs. And I asked Dan, can you improve on that? He said, oh, yeah, definitely, you know, this, and this. And I was like, well, you know, I think as a team, then you hear that and you like it, but then you haven't seen it. So there's just a big question mark that I think could make him go at a variety of different slots, to your point.
I find myself, the older I get, being wanting to be more patient with quarterbacks. when you're drafting number one, Caleb has to play for the Bears. You're drafting number two, Jaden has to play with the Commanders. But I'm looking at the situation with Minnesota and Denver, and I like what they're doing. You got Sam Darnold with Minnesota. You just signed Wilson with Denver. I would anticipate them grabbing quarterbacks. Have you seen a trend? Do you feel like there's a chance that the NFL goes back to kind of letting guys sit for a couple years? Or do you feel like, you know, it is what it is? You got an arm, you got some talent, you're drafted high. Quarterbacks have to play right now.
I think we can point to examples like, you know, Mahomes sat for a year, obviously Jordan Love, and that worked out so well in Green Bay. But Patrick Mahomes sat behind, you know, an Alex Smith-led offense that was incredibly successful, people forget. And then, of course, Jordan Love sat behind one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time in Aaron Rodgers. That's not the case with the quarterbacks that you mentioned. We always say with NFL teams taking quarterbacks, oh, they should sit them and be patient, and then they always play. New England is a good example, I think, where if they do stick and take a quarterback at three, which I think is likely, they might not play him at first. They have Jacoby Brissett, who's a very capable, probably one of the better backups in the league. But I'm telling you, that quarterback will play.
One of the maybe I want to say like most tired debates is what the Commanders do it to. And yet it's the one I can't help it. I'm going to be fascinated. It's going to be the Commanders on the clock at two. And I'm going to go, is it Jaden? Is it Drake? I don't know. And it doesn't matter how many times I've heard this debate and how many cases I have heard made for either player. I know you talked about it on your latest episode of the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. What have you settled on in terms of a direction you'd be curious to see the Commanders take or that you'd like to see them take?
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to take Daniels. My colleague Adam Schefter has been sort of gesturing towards that for a while now, and he certainly knows a lot more than I do about what these teams are poised to do. And, you know, for me, as far as, like, what I would do, I have said I have a slight preference for May because I like his upside so much, his tools, the level of adversity he overcame at UNC, and I have some questions about Jaden in terms of, just the lack of second reaction throws and his size, but I do think he's a really talented young quarterback, and I'm excited to see whether that translates to the NFL. A little bit worried about the situation. Like, we talk about how, you know, rough it is in New England. In Washington, they've got great playmakers, Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, but you got Cliff Kingsbury, who, you know, didn't have a ton of success calling NFL offense, and then an offensive line that I actually would say is probably near bottom 10 or so of the NFL. So I'd be a little bit worried about the situation he's walking into and starting from day one.
Now, I went to Washington State, but I got love for the athletes over there at UW. And I've been a big advocate for Michael Penix. And my belief is that if he didn't have the injury history that he does have, he might be the third quarterback taken in this draft. If he didn't have that injury history, meaning coming off the 2 years he had at UW, where do you think he would be drafted?
Yeah, I think you would definitely have a case for top three, certainly top four. I think with Penix, it's not just the injury history that gives me and I suspect NFL teams some pause. He is an older prospect, and I know we can laugh at, like, what's the difference between 24 and 21 or what up, but it actually does make a big difference to these teams. And when you look at the track record of different quarterbacks at different ages, you can see why. And then, you know, he's got this incredible arm. He's super aggressive. But, of the top six, while I would say he has functional mobility and can move inside a muddy pocket decently well, he doesn't have the sort of mobility that the others have. And I do think that's a ding, especially, you know, given how important it is in today's NFL. But I really like him. And if he lands with, like, a team like Vegas, which is the team I think he's been linked to the most, I would love to see him get the opportunity to start right away.
If you were a team that badly needed defensive help, would you love or hate this draft? Because, Mina, this is a team or this is a draft where it's like it's going to be heavy offense in the top 10, which means you could have some great players slide, but I can't tell if it's just a bad class for defense. I don't know. How do you see it?
It depends where you're drafting, Stacey. Yeah. Like, if you're drafting where the Seahawks are, I love it because it's very possible that 9, even 10, which would be a record, offensive players go in the top 10. And if that happens, you know, the players I mentioned are fantastic. You'll have your pick as some really talented prospects. Now, if I was a team picking in the top 10 and top 5, certainly, and defense was the priority, I would not love it because the value just wouldn't align there. And I think that's what makes it interesting for a team like Atlanta, who picking at 8, because there are questions as to whether or not, you know, they could get a similar caliber player if they trade down just to, like, you know, maybe say the midpoint of the draft versus where they're picking.
Brandon Ayuk, in my opinion, is the best receiver on the Niners. Now, Debo does some things, you know, Kittle, you got McCaffrey, but I look at his receiver play, and I think he's the number one receiver. Obviously, he's been rumored to be looking for a trade. I'm looking at the Buffalo Bills and saying, if I'm the Buffalo Bills with the situation with Stephon Diggs, I'm going to make a bid for Brandon Ayuk. Do you see a fit somewhere in the league for Ayuk?
I would love that for the Bills. I do not think the San Francisco 49ers would do it. I might be wrong, but I think that they value him the way that you and I share your belief that he's a true number one. And I'm inclined to think that, just, you know, given where they are with the Super Bowl window and all of that, they're going to try to keep him. The question is kind of, okay, well, how do you thread that needle when you have, you know, Debo making as much as he is and you're about to pay Brock Purdy? I think very carefully is the answer. My suspicion, and I could be wrong, is that they'll pay Ayuk and then they'll let Debo walk or trade him next year, and then they'll pay Brock Purdy. So it'll be kind of like a staggered thing. But yeah, I mean, if I'm certainly on an AFC team, I'm picking up the phone and asking if he's available.
I know that we've been looking a lot at 16 and in the first round in general, but obviously you also know the Seahawks' needs and you know other holes that they have on this roster. Earlier in the show, Bump and I answered the question, I really hope the Seahawks end this draft by at least doing what? And Bump said, you know, getting an offensive lineman that can compete for a starting role. Yeah. I said taking some kind of inside linebacker somewhere. By the end of day three, you're hoping the Seahawks leave at least with what?
Well, I like both of your guys' answers. I do really hope that they address edge, though. You know, and their track record drafting there is not phenomenal over the last few years. Yeah, so I get some hesitation back about that. Nwosu coming back will be massive. But to me, edge, offensive line, off-ball linebacker, three things I'd love to see them hit in the first few rounds.
When do the Seahawks start drafting for, or just draft the best talent that's out there rather than positions? I think we look at 16 and we go, all right, interior defensive lineman, an offensive lineman. And then after that, is it just up in the air? Or do you feel like there are still some positions of needs that need to be addressed early, or do you just go for best available?
I think the ones we addressed or we talked about are probably the only positions where I feel like you really want to come out of this draft with something. You know, I think in free agency, obviously they addressed linebacker, safety, but those linebackers are on 1 year deals, you know, and I think we're going to learn a lot from this draft about Michael McDonald's, not just his view of the roster, but his view of the defense and what he wants it to look like, what kind of players he values. There's an assumption that he's just going to try to emulate Baltimore in every way, but first, there's no Roquan Smith in this draft. Second, you know, I we don't know that for sure necessarily. So I'll be curious to see what kind of defensive players they go after, because I suspect they will certainly come out of this with heavy defense addition to the offensive line.
Hey, this player isn't going to be a Seahawk, but Brock Bowers is one of the most fascinating prospects in this class to me, in part because of the conversation about positional value, right? It's just an interesting philosophical conversation. Shield Kapadia, who I know you and I both love, Shield Kapadia is great. He pointed out that in the last decade, there's just been maybe not the best track record of first-round tight ends taken. Do you see anything from Brock Bowers, who's probably going to go at 10 to the Jets, that makes you think he could buck that trend and maybe be worth the pick there?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think he is more complete than Kyle Pitts, who was taken at four. And, you know, it's really hard to poke holes in Bowers' game. I mean, he if you think of him as an offensive weapon and not a tight end, and he played in the slot a lot in college, I mean, he's used all over, they split him out wide as well, then it starts to become a little bit less controversial to think of him going in the first half of the draft. You know, the financial aspect certainly, I think, is actually more appropriate ding against him, taking him high, because you're not going to get the benefit of, you know, the relative value, right, of the rookie contract versus the tight end position that you do with the taking receiver there. But the football side of it, I actually am less concerned about him, because I really do think he's going to be productive immediately.
Last one I got for you, Mina. Last year, the Houston Texans were the hot team. I mean, you see what CJ has done over there. Now they acquire Diggs. You got Hunter. Will Anderson had himself a great year. How close are they to really being contenders in the AFC? I mean, you know how deep it is over there. What needs to be done and how close are they?
I think they're already contenders. I think that a couple things, you got to get better at running the ball. It's really bad last year. Their run game was really bad, and they ran a lot in first down, so they were kind of behind six a lot. And then defensively, the pass defense just needs to improve on the back end. But, you know, they made a lot of nice additions in free agency, like what they did up front in particular, and a linebacker. And, you know, the biggest thing, I think, actually, is just more not getting worried if there are some, or I guess not being too concerned about some ups and downs to start the season. There's this kind of assumption that, oh, the Texans were so good and they're so finished the season so strong, they're definitely going to continue. Well, it's not always linear like that, you know. There could be some ups and downs with Stroud, and so I think just being kind of having the metal to not be too worried if that happens. But I think D'Amico Ryans is certainly capable of that.
She is NFL analyst Mina Kimes. Make sure you're listening to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Her latest episode exploring the biggest questions of round one of the NFL draft was uploaded this morning, so you can prep by listening to that. It is a staple in my podcast rotation. Mina, I'm sure that you have a lot coming up in the next couple days leading up to round one. Tell us where people can hear you, find you, as we head into the biggest NFL weekend of the offseason.
Yeah, I'll be in Detroit Wednesday through Friday. We're doing NFL Live from there, so you can watch on ESPN. But the podcast and some extra draft content are all available on youtube.com/@MinaKimes. A lot of Seahawks talk for Hawks fans who are listening, so go check it out.
All right, thanks so much, Mina. We appreciate it.
Bye, guys.
All right. Before we get to headline rewrites, I thought it was interesting. I'm glad that you asked about Michael Penix, because a question that I've been curious about is, it can't just be the injuries with Penix for some people. And Mina pointed out, like, you know, look, Mina loves Michael Penix. Mina is a Huskies fan. She's a fan of Seattle sports. I have seen her hype the Huskies up all the time on Twitter. But I did like that she was honest. And she said, look, there are things that analysts that I trust and respect see with Michael Penix's game that isn't just the injuries. What did you make of that?
She essentially said it's the mobility. She said that obviously Jane Daniels is a bit more mobile. Caleb is obviously a bit more mobile. Look at Drake, he's more mobile. J.J. McCarthy, I would say, is a bit more mobile. I think that is a perception that you can get from watching Michael Penix play. And I think that because of the offensive line he had and because of the receivers he had, he didn't have to be mobile. I think he's way more mobile than what people think. But I think when you see it consistently from the guys in front of him, naturally you're going to think that they are more mobile, and they probably are. But I think if Penix were in an offense to where that was highlighted a bit more, maybe you feel differently about it. But all you have is what you see on tape.
All right, let's get to Hype Train. It wasn't the normal tease to it. And not even like, now we're talking about Hype Train, head into the station. Sorry, Matt. I am going to read you a trend, a prediction in the world of sports. Of course, these are all about the draft, and I'll throw in a Mariners one. If you are buying it, you're boarding a ticket, you're telling me why it's not just a hype train, it's real. And of course, if you think it's nothing but hype, you are letting it go on by. So we're going to start with this one. It's kind of convoluted, but I was thinking about it since we were talking about quarterbacks with Mina. J.J. McCarthy, projected to be the fourth quarterback off the board this year, will have more success in year one than Caleb, Jaden, and Drake.
All right, so if he's projected to be the fourth quarterback off the board, we're projecting that someone either jumps up to number four or number five. Yep. So we're thinking Minnesota or Denver. Mm-hmm. So you got to look at the situations that he could get in. If he were in a Minnesota situation, they have to sign Justin Jefferson. I think you're okay there. If he ends up going to the Denver Broncos, you have two or three receivers over there that are good to go. Caleb is going to struggle his first year. I don't think there's enough over there for him to go out there and throw for 3,500 yards. He ain't touching 4,000. And no quarterback has done that in Chicago. So just because I think it's going to take a bit longer for the Bears to build a team around Caleb to let him go out and ball out, I'm going to go with JJ because he's going to go to a more complete team. So I am on that train. that Caleb is going to have a better year than all of them dudes his first year.
That's a bold prediction, but I like it. Boarding this hype train early. The hype train is that J.J. McCarthy, projected to be the fourth quarterback off the board, will have more success in year one. I kept it limited to year one. Then the three going ahead of him, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May. Curtis.
Boy. I don't see it happening. I think Caleb Williams will have the most success because he's already got a really good wide receiver group. And they could even add to that. They could take a Rome Odunze. They could take a Neighbors with pick number 9. Like, they could surround him with even more than what he's got in Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. So, yeah, I think Caleb Williams is going to have the most success of any rookie quarterback in year one. So I'm not boarding this train. You can't make me.
I actually think it will be Caleb as well, even though Chicago is in a rockier situation, bump to your point, than is the Vikings, who could take JJ. It would also be fun, and we saw this mock from, it wasn't Eric Edholm, Nick Ryder. It would also be fun to see a team like the Giants take JJ McCarthy, which is also shaky ground. They've got to fix their offensive line. They don't have Saquon anymore, but I'm fascinated to see what happens with these guys. I'm going with Caleb, though. Next up, let's assume for the purposes of this hype train that Troy Fautanu is not available at 16, because otherwise no one's boarding it and you guys are all saying take Troy. Troy Fautanu is not here at 16. The Seahawks should get an edge rusher.
They should get an edge rusher if they have him higher than any interior defensive lineman. If they have Byron Murphy or whoever else is there ranked higher than their edge rusher, then you got to go interior.
Okay.
But I think there's more talent on the edge than in the interior when it comes to this draft. So I'm just going to go ahead and say, go ahead and get your edge rusher, Dan.
Most talented, just best player available.
Best player available, but yeah. I'm assuming that the best player available would be an edge rusher.
Yeah, all right. Bump is boarding. If Troy Fautanu is not there at 16 for the Seahawks, they should get an edge rusher. Bump boarded, saying, look, they need an interior defensive lineman. I'd like to see it, but the best defensive player available probably will be an edge. Curtis, are you boarding?
That logic is pretty sound because, as we know, the need for great defensive tackles, I think, is more so than it is for an edge rusher. But those guys are such hot commodities that they're probably going to be off the board. So, yeah, if there's just nobody in the trenches worth investing in at pick 16 and you really like what they've got in maybe like Leiatu Latu or Jared Verse or what have you, then yeah, that's probably the best fallback option for the Seahawks at 16. So I'll board. If you can't address the trenches at 16, you might have to pivot a little bit.
We'll jump to the next hype train here. I'm going to skip myself so I can fit in one more train. Brock Bowers, one of the most fascinating prospects in the class. Will he buck the trend of first-round tight ends, not really accruing a ton of yardage and getting the most bang for their buck? Your hype train today is a little more philosophical. A tight end should not be a top 10 pick in the draft.
A tight end should be a top 10 pick in the draft if his name is Brock Bowers this year. So, no, I think every year is different. I mean, we're leaning away from running backs going top 5. We saw one go 7 or 8 last year with Bijan Robinson. I think every single year there's going to be an exception to the rule, or every few years an exception to the rule. And I think Brock Bowers is exactly that. So, should not be a top 10 some years. This year, yeah, for sure. I'm rolling with Brock Bowers, so I guess I'm not on that track.
You should never take a tight end in the top 10 of the draft. Bump is not boarding. He said, look, Brock Bowers is the exception, and that's all I need for this hype train not to be true. Curtis, are you boarding?
I think if he is a one of A1s, then yes, he should be a top 10.
Yeah, then positional value, throw it out.
Yes.
Who cares?
So I am not going to board this train. If they are the best of the best, then I don't think it should matter where you pick them. I feel the same thing about running backs. Like, people are clowned on like Saquon Barkley getting a top 5 pick and Ezekiel Elliott, but it's like, those two guys have been ridiculously productive throughout their careers. If a guy's good enough, if he's got the talent, it really should not matter where he's being selected in the first round.
You're listening to Bump and Stacy on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. What I need to know coming your way at 45 after, because we are having the dugout coming your way at 1. All Mariners from 1 to 2. Looks like Bryce Miller joining us at 1 p.m. Very excited to talk to him. We're also going to hear from Rick Riz coming up at 1:30. Very good stuff before they start the series in Arlington. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Taking a look around the NFL before we get to what I need to know. Get your questions in for that. Coming your way in 15-866-979-3776. And then Bryce Miller is joining us to begin the 1 p.m. hour for the dugout. Before we get to any of it, though, let's go to the NFL draft as part of our NFL headlines. After remaining neck and neck, Jaden Daniels has separated himself from Drake May as the betting favorite to be the number two pick in the draft. The two had identical odds a few days ago. This story from NBC Sports Pro Football Talk. Here's what's wild to me, Bump. If Jaden Daniels doesn't have the Heisman year that he did, and rightfully earned that Heisman after putting up, what, 40-something, 40 touchdowns? Yep. An insane year. Is he even a first-round pick?
No.
That's
he's
wild.
Not. I mean, that is how crazy you can raise your stock. Also, there's the benefit of the transfer portal. Doesn't work in Arizona State. The coaching was a little suspect, I believe. No, that was after Antonio Pierce and Herm was there. So the coaching wasn't bad over there. But you get an opportunity to go to the SEC to get teamed up with two really good receivers. You take that, you raise your stock, you win the Heisman. You are now going to be the number two pick in the draft.
Yeah, it's just absolutely insane. And the thing is, he could end up being phenomenal. Maybe he needed to blossom and bloom in the right environment, which was with LSU and all these weapons around him. Like, maybe that's what he needed. You know what I mean? But there obviously is that small resume that makes you wonder whether he can actually do it in the pros, what that looks like in Washington. Mina Kimes of ESPN joined us about 30 minutes ago, and she rightfully pointed out, look, we all focus on, a mess in Chicago, and we all focus, on this situation in New England, wondering what that's going to look like. And completely overlook the fact that the Commanders have Cliff Kingsbury as offensive coordinator, who hasn't proven like a ton. They've got their own issues and concerns there. I mean, that's tough. That is a tough environment in which Jaden is going to try to succeed.
Here's something he does have. Austin Eckler as a running back. Byron Robinson as a running back. McLaurin as a receiver. I think Jahad Dotson can be good. There are some pieces on offense, and then you bring over Zach Ertz as well. We talked about the offseason that these guys have. You got Bobby Wagner. You got Frankie Louvelle on defense. I'm just saying, history says he's going to struggle over there with the Washington Commanders, but that roster ain't all bad.
Well, if Jaden ends up going to Washington at number two, it sure seems like Drake May is going to be it for the Patriots at number three, because also from NBC Sports, the Patriots have not received a serious offer for pick number three. They said that they were open to business, Elliott Wolf did, a few days ago, and it doesn't sound like they're moving.
They were on offer up and said serious offers only.
Yeah, they
didn't
said,
get no serious ones.
They did it where it was like, hey, if you're selling that lamp that you bought a while ago, maybe you should mark it down. They were like, no, I paid what I paid.
Yeah, they listed it at 25. You offer 12, it ain't going to go down.
Not at all.
Drake May. Go do your thing, young fella. I'll be rooting for you. That's all I got for Drake. I'm done with bashing Drake May. I got coverage on Thursday. I'm going to be at VMAC for 10 hours, it feels like. I'm done bashing Drake May.
Why be done?
Because he's a human being.
Well, you're not bashing him personally. And Drake May could be an amazing leader. He could be an amazing kid. But what are the questions people have about Drake May as a passer?
Yeah, they got questions of him as a passer.
What are they?
Everything.
Accuracy?
Everything.
Okay.
Decision making, rolling out to the left.
So why,
you name
I'm
it.
Flipping it. Why do people love him? Why might he go at number three overall before Penix, before Bo, before JJ, before guys, two players that were in the national title game, and one guy who has started more games than any of these other players?
Because he's thrown the ball more than them. That's about it. I don't get it. I'd take JJ, Penix, Bo, all over Drake. But go get your money. I'll never hate on a guy getting that bag.
Well, let's talk about the quarterback that's absolutely positively going at number one overall, that being Caleb Williams. On the Pivot podcast, Caleb Williams spoke about his mindset in college when he was behind fellow 2024 draft prospect Spencer Rattler back at Oklahoma.
At the time, I was so angry, so frustrated, because I didn't feel like that wasn't what I wanted to hear, because I felt like I was the best. I felt like I could have helped us win you know, all the games, getting more reps, you know, getting later in the season. And you know, I'm ready for those moments, you know, later in the season. So I didn't get those reps. I kept preparing as best that I could. So when I had my moment, there was no way that he was ever going to get it back. And so it goes back to the, I watched and learned Tom Brady.
Yeah.
For Drew Bledsoe is when you prepare when you get your moment, because you never know how long it's going to be. You never know what's going to happen. When you get your moment, you don't give it back. And so that was my mindset and plan. And I went there saying that I was going to beat him out. I feel as if I did. Didn't happen. So I had to pivot. I had to change. I had to keep going and adjust to what the position I was in. Be the same person every day. But when I got my shot,
yeah,
nothing else was going to happen other than me being the guy.
Some of my favorite stories are also quarterbacks who maybe became great or who are going to face, you know, great opportunities like being number one in the draft, who were at some point backups, particularly when those guys didn't do much of anything. For instance, Caleb talking about being a backup to Spencer Rattler, who's going to go day three when Caleb's going to go number one. Or like Patrick Mahomes, granted, when he was a freshman, becoming the backup to Davis Webb, and then Webb gets injured, and that's how Mahomes gets starting time at Texas Tech.
I love this. I love that he bet on himself. That's tough. As a quarterback, the first thing you ask when you're being recruited is, or the first thing you look up, who's over there? Who's in front of me? How many years am I going to get to play or at least compete to be the starting quarterback? When you're a talent like Caleb Williams, it don't even matter. You just show up and say, I'm going to beat this guy out. So I appreciate that about him. The more I listen to him speak, the more I kind of understand him and grow to like him. It's crazy. He said, I had to pivot. He's on the Pivot podcast. They need to use that as a promo.
Branding.
You're welcome for that.
He is going to be an amazing brand ambassador. Like, I think he's got a commercial star potential, like the Baker Mayfield-esque kind of like going out there talking for Hulu. I think he's going to be just fine in terms of endorsement.
I just need to clean up a little bit, like tighten that beard up a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know.
Young people, rough.
I think young
rough.
People like this kind of like, you know, laissez-faire, like, I just look like this.
Yeah, kids like it. Nike might not like it. You see his Dr. Pepper commercial, he's cleaned up.
Yeah. The Bengals have re-signed Jake Browning to a two-year deal. Speaking of quarterbacks, congratulations to the former Husky who's staying with Cincinnati as a backup there.
Love me some Jake Browning, man. Again, he came into the season last year, was going to be the backup. Then Joe Burrow goes down, and he has himself some great performances. Threw for over 300 yards against Pittsburgh. It was in a loss, though. Threw for over 300 against Minnesota in a win. He has some moments, man, and it was cool because I actually met him last year before the season and became a fan just by interacting with him. So then to see him go out and do his thing, big ups, Jake Browning. Do your thing, man.
Let's talk about wide receivers, one of your favorite topics, with Bucky Brooks' latest mock 4.0 for NFL.com and NFL Network. In his latest mock, the number two wide receiver off the board. You want to take a guess at who he's got?
Rome.
Nope.
Neighbors.
Yep. Malik Neighbors going number six to the New York Giants. He's got Rome, widely projected to go to the Chicago Bears at number nine, though more often than not as the second wide receiver off the board. He's got him at number three.
That's fine. I mean, look. You look at Marvin Harrison, he is the technician. He's been polished. He's been bred for this. You look at Neighbors, he's a bit undersized, but he will go up and get the football extremely explosive. You look at Roman Dunze, he's smooth as heck, has great ball skills. I don't think you can go wrong with any three of these guys. Mm-hmm. Me personally, you know where I stand in this, though.
Bucky has Troy Fautanu going at number 16 to the Seahawks. That seems to be just a near unanimous mock choice for most experts. He's also got Dallas Turner still available, though. Earlier in the show, he's got him going at number 19 to the Rams. Much earlier in the show, you and I looked at, okay, if this edge rusher was available, would you take him over Troy Fautanu? And with Dallas Turner, you hesitated. You said, SEC Defensive Player of the Year, I might.
A couple hours later.
Here I am going, yeah.
You dub. Go ahead and get him.
Get your questions in for What I Need to Know. Bryce Miller joining us at 1 p.m. Questions to 866. Not for Bryce, though. If you have one, you can send it in. But for us also, 866-979-3776. That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Bryce Miller joining us in 15 minutes to kick off the dugout. Right now, we're answering your questions for What I Need to Know. So get those sent in to the Mac and Jacks text line, 866-979-3776. We'll start with this one, What I Need to Know. Assuming none of the top dogs fall to 16, do you trade back if Troy Fautanu, Byron Murphy, Brock Bowers are all gone?
Yep. Trade back into the mids, get you a second round pick, and all is good.
God, I'm glad that they have Leonard Williams. He played well for them, and it kind of went under the radar because the defense as a whole wasn't great, obviously. I would be okay with them using a second rounder on a starting defensive lineman, and that being Leonard Williams, mm-hmm. but not having it still hurts. It's like when they traded it for Dwayne Brown, and you were like, I'm cool with it. He's your best offensive lineman, but it hurts.
Yeah. You just like to be invited to the party. There's a party every round, and when you're sitting around just, you know, twiddling your thumbs and watching everybody else have fun, you get FOMO.
Yeah.
So I don't want FOMO second round.
This is a fun one from the 360. You will be replacing a character in any animated Disney movie using your name, image, and likeness. So you as a cartoon. What movie or character are you going with?
In an animated.
I'm telling you, I'm going with The Little Mermaid, but with my singing ability. And I'm a bad singer. And I'm not going to hold. I'm going to look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? Wouldn't you say my collection's complete? And then the people are going to be like, oh, my God, like, please stop.
When you that do sing, funny. You like to go on those runs like Christina Aguilera.
Hi, Eric.
Okay. All right.
That's going to be me.
Mine... I'm going to go with...
Under the Sea.
I'm going to go with Spider-Man.
One
of
Spider-Man. So cool.
Yeah, I'm going to Spider-Man.
That's not Disney. That's Marvel. Matt was ready. Matt grabbed
Marvel
does it count?
Movies on Everyone Disney
stop.
Plus.
Okay, Everyone cool. stop. So, I'm the only person here that is qualified to make this distinction.
That is true.
The animated Spider-Man movie that you're talking about, the Miles Morales one, mm-hmm. was made by Sony, not Disney, because Sony technically owns the film rights to Spider-Man and only leases them to Disney for the live-action MCU movies. I'll shut up now.
Technicalities. All right, I'm going Coco then.
That's a good one.
Coco, I want to play the guitar.
I'm just trying to decide if I want to choose another one. Now, if I get to be Jasmine, I have a pet tiger. Okay. if I go Cinderella, I have to clean up for my family all the time, which I don't like. I'm sticking Little Mermaid.
Oh, 253. Yeah, Aladdin would be dope.
Yeah.
Aladdin would be dope.
Someone said, street rat.
Stacy, for the love of God, please stop. Please stop. Okay. Someone said, thanks. Finally got a chance to listen to sports radio, and this is what I get on my lunch break.
Oh, no.
Quality.
Sorry. Let's see. What I need to know. When you travel, do you live out of your suitcase or do you unpack and then put clothes in the dresser?
I live out of my suitcase.
Yeah, I was going to say, be honest.
It ain't touching it. I've never traveled with anyone who... I could be at a place for a week.
Yeah.
The suitcase, the clothes stay.
I was going to say, I do that. If I go somewhere, like a wedding, like I've, you know, I'm going to like be in a wedding. Not a destination wedding, but like I might take out one or two things. Like if it's like a dress or something mm-hmm. and hang it up. But otherwise, I barely unpack my bag.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, sorry.
Takes me a while to unpack when I get home, too.
Someone said Mahomes voice. Mahomes as Little Mermaid. Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat?
Sound like Louis Armstrong.
Out of your world.
And I think I'm eyes out.
I can't do it. What I know. What I need to know. Do you use a lower power setting on your microwave? I'm going to be honest with you guys. I don't know how to do this. I've lived with microwaves my whole life, and I do not. When people say use a lower power setting, I don't know what you're saying. You're speaking another language to me. I've never seen such a setting anywhere on my microwave.
We're microwaving everything at full blast, baby.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, what do you mean? Do you use a lower power setting? This person says, I use power level 70 because it helps heat more. Never have I understood how to do that.
Yeah. I haven't had a microwave in 15 years.
What I need to know, as much as Luis Castillo gets paid, why is he... I'm sorry, hang on. You said you haven't used a microwave in 15 years.
It's a little toaster oven.
That takes longer.
It does.
But it takes, yeah.
It keeps... I don't want to, like, microwave shame people, though. So that's...
Well, what's wrong with microwaves?
The microwaves take most of the nutrients out of the food, so you don't get the same... you know, nourishment that you should get. That's why.
I mean, if I'm microwaving something, I'm not worried about nutrients or anything.
Well, I just toaster oven some chicken with some rice.
I have a question.
How do you make popcorn?
What if I need to reheat soup?
We don't eat popcorn in the house. No. Only at the movies.
So would you put soup in a pot and on the stove and turn it back on and reheat it?
Yeah. It's long. It takes longer.
So much work.
It takes longer, for sure.
Do you use the toaster oven when you're here at work or the microwave? Be honest.
Toaster oven.
What?
Yeah, I've seen Bump put, like, cold spaghetti in the toaster oven.
I'm moving on. As much as Luis Castillo gets paid, why is he rarely mentioned first when Mariners pitching's talked about? Gilbert and or Kirby are mentioned before him.
Because they had the better starts. Simple as that. Castillo, we were perceived, or we thought Castillo wasn't at the top of his game, which he wasn't, but it wasn't as bad as it looked. Mm-hmm. But I think it's because they had better starts, so you naturally go to the hotter arms.
Can I also say something?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. Something about Luis Castillo does make him go under the radar. Like, last year he was great, and he wasn't being talked about a ton or nearly enough nationally. And even when we were talking, like everyone on the station, people in the city, were talking about the Mariners season, we didn't mention Luis Castillo a ton.
Nah, you think we take him for granted?
I think that's part of it. I think that he's a low-key guy. I think that he is consistently really, really good, but he is not the best in baseball where you just undeniably have to pay attention to him.
Yeah.
But nor are Kirby and Gilbert, but they're young, so you're wondering what their ceilings are like. I don't know. It's a good question. Because I do think there's something to that.
There is.
There is something to him kind of fading a little bit in a really unfair way.
I would say, like, personality, because Gilbert just seems more aggressive on the mound. Miller has just swag. Mm-hmm. And Castillo's kind of, you know, just calm and low-key.
Yeah. What I need to know, do you think you'll ever own a flying car in your lifetime?
Nah, I ain't trusting that.
He doesn't even own a microwave. Why would he own a flying car?
Thank you. No, and I don't want to.
I ain't trusting. Nah, unless I mean, shoot, Boeing even tripping. I barely trust them these days. And you wouldn't trust a flying car?
I don't trust a flying plane. Like, I'm already struggling. Someone said, "Here we go, return of shower bench Bump." Yeah, exactly. Bump's too good for microwaves.
See, that's why I didn't want to say nothing.
Yeah, well.
I knew you guys were going to be on my head.
What I need to know, they said it's the defrost button is how you change. What?
The defrost button. Then that, I would assume, just, like, the powering. Obviously, power is not the same, but the objective is different.
Yeah. What I need to know, let's see if I can squeeze one more in here. When will J-Rod start hitting bombs out of the park?
Today.
From Ira in the Couve. All right, you guys. You have been listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports. We're not going anywhere, but for our final hour, we become the dugout. It is all Mariners from 1 to 2, and we're starting by having Bryce Miller on. Don't go anywhere. It's coming your way next.